Hello, friends, and welcome to the Caroline Gleick Show. Caroline Gleick here, professional ski mountaineer, advocate, and candidate for U.S. Senate in Utah. I'm your host. On this special season of the podcast, we're going to be taking you along with us on the campaign trail as I run for this big seat. We're going to be speaking to policy experts, members of our campaign team, and community organizers and advocates to explore how we can use our voices and skills to change our state, country, and the world. I'm very excited for the adventures ahead, and I can't wait to take you along. Okay, I am so excited to be here chatting with Nina, a dear friend. Nina, how's it going today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for taking the time. I can only imagine how busy it is with the two boys. How old are they now?
So Cohen is 8 years old and Ashton is six. So they're very busy, best friends, doing all the things all the time.
That is so fun. And how's Andy doing? Andy is your partner, and yes. I think that's how we first met.
Yes. You guys met through work, I believe, or was it just outdoorsy
yeah.
things? But
I think it was from my ex from Forest.
Yes, that's right. And got to know each other through athlete things and climbing together and everything. But he's doing well. He's working a lot. He's doing a lot of freelancing. We have a home that we got in the last 3 years. We're just really happy. We're sitting pretty and doing well. So,
and you guys are in Utah County, in Lehigh still?
Yep. We are in Orem.
In Orem.
We
okay.
moved to Orem about 3 years ago. So
awesome. Well, again, thanks so much for being here. I have such great memories of climbing with you and Andy in Maple Canyon. I remember we did
yes.
that tower, that like four
yes.
pitch tower climb. That was so exciting. And it's been really great to follow your journey into motherhood and all of the trials and tribulations. And so when did you guys decide to start a family?
So, you know, we wanted a few years together, and it was a few years in, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. So I had to go through the whole process of getting diagnosed, figuring out treatment, getting that all taken care of. And my doctor was like, you can't start a family until you get into remission. So the goal was to get into remission, and then we can start thinking about planning for a family. So I got into remission in 2010, and we had been married for about a year. Well, I got into remission in 2011, and so we kind of just were like, we should just start trying, because you never know if it's going to be a long journey, it's going to be an easy journey, hard journey. So we just started to try. And so it was not too long after we had been married that we started to try.
I feel like deciding to start a family, and it's like the ultimate sign of hope. And I mean,
yeah.
It's like such a big commitment. I have so much
yeah.
on admiration, and especially for moms, because like the
yeah.
process of going through pregnancy is so, so difficult. It can be really difficult, and some women breeze through it so easily. But as a society, it really seems like there's a huge lack of resources to help with like not just pregnancy, but with postpartum and everything as well. I just again want to say how much I appreciate your transparency. Like, I've been following you your whole journey with this, so I feel like I know all the little steps. And I was wondering if you would talk about how your first pregnancy went.
Yeah, so our first pregnancy, you know, you talk about trying to start a family, and I think we've all seen people start families, and we've all seen people have a hard time. We've all seen people have good times, but you never know what it's going to be like for you. And until you're really in it, there's no way anybody can really tell you. So, we decided to get pregnant. We got pregnant pretty quickly, found out it was a girl. Pregnancy was going fine. Things were going well. I mean, all the regular pregnancy things for a first time pregnant woman, you're just like, is this normal? Is this okay? Following your intuition, your instinct. Towards the end of the pregnancy, we found out I had some complications. I had something called cholestasis of pregnancy. And due to that and the mishandling of my care by my medical provider, she was stillborn around 37 weeks. So that was our introduction into parenthood, pregnancy, family. And it was hell. Not anything to ever wish on anybody. But, you know, a lot of really important life lessons and connections and community and things happened because of that. So that was our introduction into parenthood and family, starting a family.
Yeah. And you documented this all really openly through your social media. And again, like, I've been following, I'm like tearing up over here because And you, her name was Indira, and it's just so beautiful the way that you write about her and the way that
Thank
you
you.
continue to honor her and celebrate her and to keep her memory alive. And of course, it's not the way that you want the story to go, right? But it's just one of the realities. And so thank you so much for being so open about sharing that, because, and then how, was it, did you find it helpful and healing to share your journey, or what was your decision to share it? And
well, I've always kind of been an open book and always been someone who shares everything. But for me, what I was diagnosed with, this cholestasis of pregnancy, is where your liver starts to malfunction towards the end of your pregnancy, and it becomes fatal for a baby, can become fatal for a baby. It was something I wasn't aware of, and nobody around me I had ever known had something like this. And so it was kind of, you know, I don't want her little life to be in vain. I need to be able to share this with other people, help them to recognize their own symptoms, help them to advocate for themselves with their doctors, not let doctors like mine tell you, oh, you'll be okay. You know, and you don't want to be that patient that's nagging and annoying and everything, but also to be able to know how to take care of yourself, advocate for yourself, and follow your instincts. So that was my main purpose in really documenting that story. And also it helped me grieve. There's times when I want to grieve privately, but I also, you know, we're not meant to wander and walk in this life alone. You know, there's a reason why, you know, for eons of time, we've lived in villages and tribes, and, you know, we're meant to help each other grow and process and learn and survive. And so sharing my story was very helpful for me to process my feelings, and in return, helping me connect with other parents who are going through something similar, had lost a child. And so, you know, solidarity and being able to grieve with others is a really good thing to help with my grief process. So
yeah, I can, like, the first part of it that you talked about that I wanted to speak to is just like the being pregnant part. And I could only imagine how, like, I mean, I think it's part of the reason that we keep like waiting and waiting is I just feel like it would be so stressful. I'm like, I would want to have the doula or like the 24/7 text support, because it seems so stressful. And like, there would be so many questions, and I'm definitely like an overthinker, and I fixate sometimes on things and then once you get something in your head, like, you really want that opinion. So what are some more resources or things you wish that you had or that you'd want to see in pregnancy care for women and families who are starting? Like, did you have access to a doula or midwife, or was there like availability?
I honestly didn't know what a doula was at the time. That was something that was brought to my attention later on. I knew what a midwife was, but since I had had cholestasis, I was considered a high risk. I mean, excuse me, not cholestasis, Crohn's disease. I was considered a high risk pregnancy. So seeing a midwife was not really an option for me. I needed to be able to have, you know, a healthcare provider that could practice in the hospital and, you know, in emergency situations.
Yeah.
So I never really had considered those things, but I think what is, I look back now and is really important to me is be able to have a community that you can openly discuss and ask questions in the process. Like I said, you don't know what you're getting into until you're into it. To be able to have some sort of, you know, crowdsourcing forum, Facebook group, any type of group you can find to be like, is this normal? How, you know, my doctor's saying this, should I trust this? You know? So that was something I think I wish I had had a little more of. And it's crazy because I've had pregnant people around me my whole life, but everyone's, you know, situations are so different and everyone experiences things so differently. So and it's almost sometimes too close to home to ask someone like your mom or somebody else. Yeah. You know, so to have just like an open public forum to be able to speak to, I think that's such a good resource. There's a lot of Facebook groups and, you know, in this world of TikTok that wasn't there when I was pregnant originally, there's so much information now out there that's so easily access the tip of our fingers. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And then, yeah, and it's like we see it all around us, but then, it's really awesome that you were, I mean, it's really brave and courageous. And I applaud you so much for breaking the stigma about talking about these things, because it helps to pave the way for all the women and all the families that go after you. So I wanted to ask you then about your next pregnancies and how your baby boys, how it went with them.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely been a journey since then because I'm already high risk because of my Crohn's disease, and then I had a stillbirth, and cholestasis is something that can pop up in upcoming pregnancies. And then also, we did an autopsy on our daughter and found out that my blood clots when I'm pregnant. So I had all these things stacked against me for my upcoming pregnancies. But we got in touch with a maternal fetal medicine doctor. She did a lot of prenatal counseling with us. We switched practices and doctors. I had a few miscarriages. I had one miscarriage in between my daughter and then my rainbow baby, my son Cohen, who's now 8, he came. And that was a scary, scary pregnancy. You know, that the vision of a beautiful pregnancy and all those wonderful things that come with pregnancy, and then having your baby on your chest crying and breastfeeding, you know, that was all shattered for me that first time around. So all those beautiful moments, I just kept telling myself it's not going to happen. You know, I tried to like not give myself too much hope because hope felt really dangerous for me. But we were able to have Cohen, and he was healthy and wonderful. And then we were able to have my son Ashton 2 years later. And since then, we have definitely tried for more. In all, I've had 9 pregnancies, and I have just my 2 boys to show for it. But you know, in my arms, but there's a lot of scars on my heart that if you could see it, you know, you'd be able to see the what we've been through for sure.
Yeah, was it difficult to find the kind of healthcare providers that you were looking for your pregnancies?
You know, originally it was again, being a first-time mom, not a lot of resources and understanding, like, oh, you're high risk because you have a pre-existing condition, and understanding I actually should have seen a maternal fetal medicine doctor originally in the beginning with my OB. And I mentioned it to him the first time around. He said, no, they just tend to scare my patients. You don't need one. And what a maternal fetal medicine doctor is, or MFM, is they're a high risk OBGYN, OB. And they basically help you through your pregnancy, but they don't deliver you. And they specialize in very high risk situations. And then they tell your OB how to handle your pregnancy. So I should have had that to begin with, and I didn't, unfortunately. And so that was definitely something that I had moving forward after the fact. I mean, you live and you learn, right? So we found out after the fact that we should have taken that seriously, but I didn't have the information at my fingertips. I didn't know the questions to ask. I didn't know what to do. So.
Well, and it's understandable. I mean, like you would trust your medical provider to be able to connect the dots for you. And so it's really frustrating to hear that you didn't have that. And I'm glad that you found it for your subsequent pregnancies. And
But
again, go ahead.
second go around, third go around, we had a really good team, people that took us very seriously, listened to all of our concerns, spent hours and, you know, tears, cried with us over our past experiences. So we definitely, it took a little bit, but we found the team we needed to help us. So.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm sorry that you had to work so that it wasn't easier to find that because that's definitely one of the challenges now going forward in a state like Utah that has this trigger law that's in the courts and this uncertainty around being able to provide reproductive health care. And so, are you comfortable talking about your most recent pregnancy and your, abortion?
So, we did end up having an abortion. You know, like I said, we tried and we tried and tried for more babies. And so, like I said, 9 pregnancies in all, one stillborn, 2 live births, and then 5 miscarriages. And one of those was a termination for medical reasons. So, an abortion, in other words. Everything was moving along. I was seeing my maternal fetal medicine doctor, my OB. I was taking my blood thinner shots. And in one of my appointments with my MFM, they noticed something forming on the back of the neck. It's called high drops. And that's usually an indication that there might be some sort of genetic abnormality with the baby. For some babies, they just end up absorbing it and the baby ends up being fine. But for others, it's an indication of, you know, some pretty massive things that could be detrimental to the baby's development. So, after seeing that, we decided to do some genetic testing, and we found out that it was another girl and that she had full trisomy 13. And after doing our research, talking to genetic counselors, my OB, my MFM, you know, finding out this diagnosis for this baby was really, really devastating, you know, not just like mentally and emotionally, but we knew physically for her, it would be completely overwhelming for her. You know, we did a ton of research. We looked into a ton of different stories and situations, and we had a 50% chance of her being stillborn, which we've already been through that. And I would never elect to go through that again. And then if she survived birth, you know, a lot of babies don't survive past 7 to 10 days. If they survive past that, you know, it's not really past a year. And if they do survive past that, you know, it's extreme medical daily attention. We would essentially become her caregivers 24/7. And so we had to take into account the quality of life for her, the quality of life for us, and the quality of life for our boys, if, you know, this was something that we felt like we could handle. And knowing what we had already been through, we knew that this was not something we want to put our boys through and put another baby through, potentially, you know, having her have seizures 24/7, you know, not having her eyes developed, her mouth developed, and her, you know, internal organs developed. She was just going to be on constant, you know, life support every day. So in the end, we decided to terminate the pregnancy. And that was, you know, a completely different set of feelings and emotions with grief. The first time her death happened to us, Indira's death happened to us. And this go around her death, we happened to her. So that mm-hmm. was incredibly devastating and overwhelming. And again, something I would never wish on anybody. And it's interesting because I've always been pro-choice in my life. But until you have this situation sitting in your lap, I don't think you can fully understand and appreciate what goes into the decision-making that someone is given, you know, this process that is given to somebody. And so it really gave me huge appreciation for anyone who has ever had an abortion for any reason, and empathy and sympathy. You know, mine was a termination for medical reasons. There was also the chance that because where she was situated in my uterus, you know, I could bleed out and from delivery or from any type of DNC or DNE I did. So there was a small risk to my life as well. So there's all the options, you know, all the reasons why somebody might have a termination, an abortion. And I just gained a huge amount of sympathy and empathy for anyone and any reason that they have an abortion. And that was a huge eye opener for me. And I knew that I had to speak up about it and share our story.
How did he feel throughout the process?
Yeah, so it was really interesting because we both would go through this process of like, there's all these little what ifs, you know, what if she was born, you know, with just slightly less amount of disabilities and she could have, you know, a good life, you know, or what, all these little things. And so we went through times where I would be like, no, absolutely this, the what ifs, the risks are too high. We can't do this. And then there'd be times where I was just like, no. We have to go through with the pregnancy. We have to make this work. We got to figure it out. And we were flip-flopping each other both, you know, when I was saying, no, we can't do it. He was saying, yes, I think we should. And when I was saying, yes, I think we should, he was going, well, maybe we shouldn't, you know? So, I mean, ultimately it was a lot of spending time listening to each other, going through, I mean, we wrote down pros and cons. Like we literally wrote lists, you know, and just went back and forth and just had to express, you know, both of our thoughts very intricately on what we felt about every one of those bullet points. And it was hell for both of us. It really, really was.
I can only imagine. I mean, just sitting here and hearing your story, and it's so brave that you speak up, and I'm just getting all teary eyed because it would be so difficult. And,
I think it's about one of the most difficult things anyone could ever do, truthfully.
And especially to be in that situation. And so your decision, and then was in 2019, is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
So it was
2018, yeah.
2018. And so legally and with like, it was still before the Dobbs decision.
Sorry, 2019. It was 2019, yes. Before the trigger ban. And it's interesting, I look back now, had the trigger ban been in effect at the time of our decision making in that process and that experience, I'm not quite sure we would have been able to do what we did. And that is really terrifying to me. And I'm so grateful that it's like crazy. I feel like we just kind of slipped in underneath all of this, you know? There's obviously always been a charged conversation around this with a lot of feelings, a lot of thoughts. But up until that point, we still had quite good access in Utah to be able to make those decisions for ourselves. In fact, it was crazy. The day that the Roe v. Wade was overturned, I was actually in the hospital waiting to get another DNC for a miscarriage. This was, you know, another couple years later. And I was literally in pre-op finding out Roe v. Wade was overturned. And I looked at the pre-op nurse and I was like, does the trigger ban go in effect right now? Because if so, can we do this? Mm-hmm. And she's like, let me talk to the doctor. So he came back in and he said, no, trigger ban won't go into effect for a little while. Even though Roe v. Wade has been turned over, we can still do this. So it's been interesting to know that I barely was able to slip in under the radar to be able to get the abortion that I had when I had it. And then I was able to get my DNC for my miscarriage, because technically, you know, an abortion is a term for any time that a pregnancy needs to be dispelled from a body, whether the baby is living or not. So I had another pregnancy where the baby had died, but my body wasn't spontaneously, you know, getting rid of it. So I had to go in and physically end the pregnancy with a medical procedure, which is still an abortion. So,
well, I mean, it seems like, I mean, it's like all these layers are there, the grief and the trauma, and like, you know, like you are a married woman and you genuinely want a family and you need this Yes. kind of treatment. And I just can't even imagine now if you were in that situation, and not only did you have to make that decision, but then if you had to go and present that to the government mm-hmm. and to get mm-hmm. permission, and just like yeah. the ongoing trauma and the reopening of the wound to get that.
Yes. So and, I yeah. should say, technically, when we did get the abortion with this other girl that we found out had trisomy 13, they had to take it to a medical ethics board to review it, to make sure that this was, you know, because Utah still had some stricter laws. Not, I mean, it's gotten worse since then, but they did have some stricter laws at the time. So we did have to get it reviewed by a medical ethics board, and they approved it. However, now going to a medical ethics review board, I'm not sure that would have passed.
Right. Oh, that's so tragic. And so you were pro-choice before your experience. And in your community in Utah County, would you say that you're like, you've been very outspoken about this? And again, like, I commend you so much. Thank you for sharing Thanks. Your story. How would you say the attitudes of your neighbors are? Like, do people in Utah County and your friend circle and whatnot understand that this isn't just like people behaving yeah. irresponsibly, but that it's necessary and yeah. life-saving healthcare?
Yeah. I think what's been interesting is I feel like my community, my friends, my close family that I've kept around myself, we are pretty like-minded. But there are so many people around me in my community that are not, right? And so it is interesting to be able to put a face to it. They can have all these ideas in their head. They can read this story and that story and this person that doesn't fully exist in their mind, even if they see a picture of them. But to see a face in their mind of somebody they know, they can put the name, they can put an experience attached to me, you know, with interacting and knowing me. It really has changed people. I've had quite a few people reach out to me and say, seeing your story, hearing your words, knowing you has helped me change my mind or look into this more. And, you know, realize it's not so black and white. It is so nuanced. And, you know, statistics that I've heard maybe aren't correct, or, you know, they're dramatized to look like, you know, most women who have abortions are being irresponsible. Or even then, if someone gets pregnant, you know, and they don't want to be pregnant, I just say, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It's her choice. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. It is her choice. And in some cases, it's her and her partner's choice. So there definitely has been, I feel like, with being able to put my face to something like this and just coming forward and being brave, people have been like, oh, you're the person that gets an abortion, not some figment of my imagination.
Right. No, that's so important. And this is an issue that protecting access to this I mean, I hate to even use the word abortion. It just has such a negative stigma and it's like so politicized and nobody wants to have an abortion. Like,
no,
I don't think that any of the people that I know who've gone through this, that it's been like, oh, I screwed up, you know, and I didn't, the condom broke or whatever. We didn't get the plan B. And I mean, it's like a horrific decision that's like heartbreaking and it's a wound in the heart, like a deep wound.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
I guess going forward, like, what do you think about this with the election and with our elected officials? And do we need more champions for this in Congress and at the state legislature?
Oh, absolutely. We do. It's been a constant downward spiral since Roe v. Wade was overturned. And it's really, really scares me. And I just feel like it's the domino effect. Once one thing like this happens, we start restricting a woman's choice on one thing. It's just a domino effect to more things and the next thing and the next thing. And it shows that precedent can be overturned. So things that we are confident in, we no longer are confident. And so being able to have people be our champions and believe in what the people actually need is one of the most important things that we could have. I think we can speak up, we can share our voice, but what it comes down to is who we elect, because those are the people that make the decisions. And so holding them to it is also a really important thing, because I know, you know, you can say whatever you can say till you're blue in the face on a campaign trail, but once they get into office, you know, things can change. And so just being able to keep people accountable and hold them to, you know, their belief systems and choosing the right people in the first place is incredibly important.
Well, Nina, I really, really appreciate you sharing your story. As a Senate candidate, I'm going to fight hard to bring this issue to the forefront and to make sure that our elected officials, whoever my opponent is, that they know what is on the line for Utah families. And please let me know how I can support your leadership and your courage and your strength going forward. And I would love to continue this fight together, because it's so devastating to see the undoing of our rights as women and the loss of life-saving medical care. And one of the stats that really struck me is that 1 in 5 OBGYNs is considering leaving a state like Utah because of the uncertainty around the laws. And now we've talked, my husband and I, like, we talk about starting a family, and like, I've always dreamed about being a mother, but it's just the lack of resources and the uncertainty around this. And then the wait to see an OBGYN up here where I live in Park City, it's like a 9 to 12 month wait to see a doctor.
Wow.
And so the outcomes and the higher rates of maternal mortality too, because of this, and that is also, increased and magnified for marginalized communities and rural communities and women of color. And so, like, mothers, women, tons of families are going to be deeply affected by this. And there's a lot on the line. So I'd love to keep the conversation going. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I just want to say, really grateful to you for wanting to amplify my voice and people like me. Humanizing us is one of the best ways, I think, to get our points across and help each other learn and grow and accept it. You know, we're different, but we're the same. We're all just living this human life. So really putting, you know, a face to a name and to a story is really important. So I appreciate that you're taking the time and really, you know, acting on what I think you believe in. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you so, so much for sharing, taking the time out of your busy schedule and for sharing the story. I'm like, I'm just following you on Instagram. If I'll put a link to your Instagram. It's India. It's Nina Earl Anderson, right?
No, it's Nina dot Earl. I don't even know what my Instagram is.
I'm sorry. Nina, N-E-N-A dot E-A-R-L on Instagram. And do you also have your earrings and your do you still have your earrings linked to that?
Yes, yes, I do. Okay. Yeah, that's Indico Design. So you were on the right track with that one.
That's right. Okay. What is it? I'll put it in the show notes. Check out
I-N-D-I-C-O and then Designs. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I will link those in the show notes and definitely support Nina and her beautiful earrings and her work. And
thank you.
And check out her stories on Instagram. And Nina, again, thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your story, for being so brave, for putting it out there. And I'm sending you Andy and the boys and all of you so much love and
thank you.
Thinking about
Appreciate
you all
it.
The time. I follow everything you post and I feel like I feel like close to you, even though I haven't talked to you
Yeah.
in a, you know, it's been a minute. Would love to catch
Yeah.
up
Yeah,
and
for sure.
yeah, in real life.
Thanks again.
And
Good luck
yeah,
to you.
thank you. I'm
Yeah.
prepared for the fight of my life here over the next
Yes.
6 months. I'm giving it everything I've got because
You're brave. Talk about brave.
thank
You're brave.
you.
Yeah.
Well, it takes one to know one. I'm inspired by you.
Thanks.
So we'll keep the conversation going.
For
Thanks so
sure.
much. Have a great
Thank
day.
you.
Okay,
Bye.
bye. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Caroline Gleick Show. Please give us a share, leave us a nice review, and you can learn more about the campaign at carolineforutah.com. If you can, chip in a couple bucks. It really helps us meet our fundraising goals, and we'll see you on the campaign trail.